Welcome to Changes with C.A. Sidor. Real people, real lives, real changes. Join Carissa as she sits down with guests to discover how they navigated through a significant change in their lives.
Welcome to the initial episode of Changes with C.A. Sidor, where we explore real people, real lives, with real changes, without the politics and without the religion. So just to be clear, my name is Carissa, and in today's episode, we're actually sitting down with Emmy Award-winning TV writer Stephanie Coggins as she shares her transition from a corporate role to her dream career as TV writer. So as background, Stephanie has a BA in Communication Studies with the University of Michigan. And then following that, she got a Master's of Fine Arts degree in Film and TV Production with USC. When I met her, she was working in the corporate offices of the Disney ABC TV group. And shortly thereafter, she moved on to become an assistant to the executive producer of the BET show, Being Mary Jane. After a couple of production roles, she then transitioned as a TV writer with the Netflix young adult series Trinkets, where she won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Writing for a children's or young adult program. Shortly thereafter, she then moved to the sci-fi channel's The Magician series, and now she is currently story editor for the Netflix series Titans, which is part of the DC universe for all you comic book fans out there. On the side, she also co-hosts a podcast known as Cinema Craptaculous, where she and a couple of friends review some perfectly horrible movies, and is now branching out to host her own podcast, Cinema Craptaculous Presents Terror Tunnel, where she and visiting guests get a chance to review horror movies. I was going to say terror movies for some reason. So
Same thing.
So thanks so much for joining us, Stephanie. I hope I didn't miss anything.
No, thank you for that wonderful introduction. It makes me feel very, like, makes me sound very cool, even though I don't feel cool.
Well, you know how it is. When you're in the middle of living, it just is. It's just another day. So I wanted to ask, like, before we begin, like, how can folks connect with you if they're interested in you and your work, as well as what's up next?
Oh, well, definitely, like, you know, the podcast is up and running. Our website is cinemacraptaculous.com. You can reach out on comments there. Or if they want to reach me directly, I do have a presence on Twitter and Instagram. I don't know if I want to share all the handle stuff, but
share later on, and I'll put bullets. So
Cinema Craptaculous. So that way it's not like super confusing when I say.
That's fair. Well, we'll definitely have it as kind of like nail shots right here. So that way folks can follow you on the official channels that are more professional than anything. So the first question I actually had is, when did you know you wanted to become a TV writer?
Well, it happened when I was in undergrad. Well, no, technically it started in undergrad, but didn't really come to fruition until I was in grad school, in film school at USC specifically. While I was an undergrad, I had taken a screenwriting course that was more features oriented. You're writing a full length screenplay. And I thought, this is amazing. I love being able to write scripts. All up to that point, I had written short stories, poetry, novellas, that kind of stuff. But like, I hadn't really ever gotten in. Oh, plays too. I had written one act plays, but the television part didn't really come out until I got out here to LA and took a TV course at USC. And at the time, it was a half hour comedy course that I was really in love with, and I thought that this was really fun and kind of fit my way of writing, because you kind of have to like keep it moving, you know. Yeah. You get right into the action. It's not like when you're writing a novel, you describe the way the woods looked, you know, like it's not like that. Get right to the dialogue, get right to the action. So it was suitable for me. And I did spend some time after that writing a lot of half hour comedy scripts, to the point where I had several years later entered some of my writing into various diversity programs and had gotten some headway with that. I became a finalist 3 years in a row for the Disney ABC TV writing program with my comedy specs and pitches. And I also participated as a member of NBC's Writers on the Verge class of 14-15. So I was actually pretty good at writing comedy, but I didn't feel that it was still the right format for me. So once I determined, the way I determined it was actually pretty silly. Like, I was up again for the Disney Fellowship or the Disney program. And I kind of was like, I don't know how to do this anymore. Like, I don't know what to pitch. I don't know how to make this funnier. And I had this conversation with my mom, and she was like, Stephanie, you don't even watch half hour comedy. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. All this time I had been kind of moving away from that world, even like in my own, you know, my own entertainment. I was like traveling closer and closer to the dramatic world. And I had returned in a way, because when I was in theater and that kind of thing, those are the kind of scripts that I wrote.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was just sort of like a clicking, you know, an aha moment for myself. I was like, oh, okay, mom, you're right. As usual, like, I am, you know, trying to deny myself, you know, my true nature, I guess, and decided that I was going to pivot to drama. And it really paid off. At the time, I was working on being Mary Jane as the showrunner's assistant. So it was a really good time to transition. It was a good time to focus on hour long, because I not only was working in that, not only was I watching it, but I was working in it. So it made it easier for me to kind of start writing stuff that was in the same world, same milieu.
So how did you maintain, because when we met, you were working in corporate offices. How did you maintain your passion while also doing, of course, like the corporate gig, like balancing both, you know, sides of the brain, if you would?
It helped a lot that I happened to be working with a group of people who were actually very supportive of my dreams. I hadn't always been that lucky. Like, there were times when I had jobs as an assistant where they were not very good environments for me. It was either, you know, abusive or, you know, indifferent. And when you're in a situation like that, and at the time, I wasn't even really sure what I wanted to do. So it kind of felt a lot like I was struggling to find inspiration every day in a hostile environment. So it wasn't very good for the creative process.
Right.
At the time then, I actually started diving into more of my writing. I'm talking about like the comedy writing too. Mm-hmm. I was actually in a much more supportive environment and took advantage of a lot of the opportunities that were afforded to me as a person working in marketing and creative inside of a huge media company like Disney. So, you know, I was able to go to table reads. I was able to go to tapings. I was able to read pilots for our network as well as other networks. And it just really, really helped me to, it broadened my horizons in a way where I was able to see all the different ways in which these networks pick and choose what they air, the kind of shows and stories that they like to go forward with. So it was kind of like the first time that I had actual like TV boot camp. It was pretty cool. And this coincided, of course, with my time in the NBC writers program as well. So not only was I getting the top down view from everything, or like the, you know, the network view of it, but I was also getting the interior writing view of it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question. I'm trying to remember, like, what was the original question?
No, I think
how did I stay focused? And the corporate world is not easy to do that. It's not easy to do that in the corporate world.
But you did mention that you had a supportive, fortunately, later on, you had a supportive team that allowed you to branch out, right? And to branch out as far as the reads and the scripts and whatnot. So, like, what would you suggest for folks that maybe are feeling, you know, uninspired or, you know, especially having been in that kind of depressive, repressive, like, environment where there's no support in maybe in their, even their immediate environment?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, it isn't easy to work a full-time job and then also have the energy at the end of the day to come back and work on your dreams, basically. There was a time when I actually had a moment where I was like, why am I so busy making other people's dreams come true? You know, right. It's like without, you know, neglecting my own. I think some good advice that I had was just to make time as much as you can. And I know some people who are listening to this are parents. Some people are taking care of their families, older parents, neighbors, whatever. They have two jobs. They have all sorts of responsibilities. But as much as you can, try to focus on what is it about this work? What is it about your dream? You know, if you want to write, what is it about the work of writing that draws you to it? And always remind yourself of that, first of all, and then just try to find time to devote. It doesn't have to be all day. It doesn't have to be, you know, like, well, every Tuesday I have to do this, because if you do it that way, you're not giving yourself enough room to work with the unexpected that'll pop up, and then you'll feel like you failed. That's not the way it goes. Like, it's a marathon. And I think that, you know, if you care a lot about the work that you want to produce, like the kind of stories you want to write or the kind of characters you want to bring to life, just keep reminding yourself of what your goal is with that, what you want to say. Hopefully that will, you know, inspire you to push through the crap, all of the stuff that happens during your, you know, 9 to 5, and make time for that. Because if it's special and important to you, you know, nothing will stop you. I know that sounds very trite, but that's sort of what it was for me. For me, I sacrificed a lot to move out here and try to make this dream come true for myself. I left the Midwest when I was a teenager, and a lot of the people who I grew up with have hit all sorts of important milestones in their lives. Like, they've had marriages, they've had children, they've bought houses and land and taken these fantastic vacations and all sorts of stuff like that. They're able to live near their families, all of that. I sacrificed that in my life so that I could be here and do this. And now that it's actually happening, it feels like, okay, that was something that I clearly thought was important, and I'm making it happen. And I know I probably sound very pained when I'm saying this, because I'm thinking like the passage of time is like weighing on me, like, oh yeah, that's right. I have been out here for like 17 years. That's a high school senior, right? Like, if I had instead stayed in the Midwest and had a kid, that kid would be graduating from high school. Ugh. But there's a reason for that. There's a reason for me to come out here and do all that, put in the hard work and make the sacrifice. And if you are in the position to do the same, you have to ask yourself, what are you willing to sacrifice? Are you willing to put in that hard work? If the answer is no, that's fine. Maybe it's a hobby. Maybe it's not a career path. But for those of us who know that this is what we have to do in this life, all of that decision making is easy. Like, yeah, of course, I'm gonna do this. Yes, I'm gonna take this low paying job for a year because I know it'll pay off because I'm in the right position. You know, I worked minimum wage jobs because I knew that I was working with somebody who was going to help me, and they did. You know, It's just you got to keep going.
So that actually leads us to the next question, as far as like what your mindset or what the decision-making process was as far as leaving corporate, of course, job/security, but / death of dreams land to showrunner's assistant and then transition to the writing. Like, share with us your, you know, like what frame, how you made your decisions as far as changes. Apparently, of course, the showrunner's assistant, you know, you're going back, but at a higher level, back to the production side of things, with the eye towards TV writing. Would love to hear your thoughts on kind of like how you framed it.
Yeah, like for my decision to leave my pretty comfortable job that I'd had for a few years, it wasn't just like a year, it was like a few years, where I had benefits, and I had a stable position and, you know, the freedom to do whatever I wanted to in the evenings and weekends. I left that as soon as I found out that there was an opportunity for me to work directly on a show, because I knew that there was going to be no forward momentum for me unless I made that move. I had to take that leap of faith. And it really is sort of a leap of faith, because nothing's ever like, you know, no one's future is written. Everybody has to decide on a case-by-case basis what's going to be right for them. In my case, I knew that I kind of reached the end of the road with the job that I had. There wasn't going to be much forward momentum. It wasn't going to get me closer to being a television writer. So I needed to get closer. It was a pretty obvious decision to make. And for me, in that case, it wasn't, you know, altogether the most comfortable decision. In fact, I think it was like maybe 2 or 3 months after I left the job with benefits to the job with no benefits, I ended up having to have oral surgery. Oh. the repercussions of which I'm feeling to this day. But, you know, like it didn't matter. It was something that happened, but I was in such a good position. I would never have gone back. You know, I would never have been like, oh no, this is too scary. I have to go back to a comfortable corporate job, because this was forward momentum for me. This was me being able to finally get a job on a show.
Right.
And it, as it turned out, that I had heard about it through a friend. Through my own efforts, I had arranged like a monthly brunch with other Black female writers or people who were in TV as assistants, writer's assistants, showrunner's assistants, script coordinators who were trying to get staffed. And we met up every month for lunch or brunch. And it was through that, one of my friends in that was the one who pointed me in the direction of my gig on Being Mary Jane. So, you know, I was prepared. That's another really big thing, is like preparation and luck work together. Yeah. Especially in this industry, you have to be ready. When your number gets called up, mm-hmm. you have to be ready to act. And in my case, because I had been doing a lot of preparation with the writing and reading and going to table reads and going to the shoots and, you know, like having conversations with working writers, just friendly way, you know, in a friendly way, I was ready for the conversations that I needed to be able to have to get into that showrunner's assistant position and to show her that, yes, I'm going to kick butt in this job. And it's all for a reason, because I am very serious about writing. So,
yeah. So I think you actually touched on a very important item as far as networking, as far as knowing someone personally on a friendly basis. Because I think a lot of people have maybe preconceived notions of what networking means. So I think like you shared, as far as the group, like that was a, would you say it was an informal way to network with like-minded individuals pretty mm-hmm. much who had similar goals?
Definitely. It made it so much easier. And it's, I kind of have to smile, because I know that when I was first starting out, I had no idea how to, in this industry, I had no idea how to network. Like I was like, do you ask somebody to be your mentor? Like, do you, you know, yeah. what do you do? And it's like, no, you don't. Like, first of all, mentorship is a really big deal. Like, mentorship is something that a lot of people who are trying to break in to TV or film, I think they're kind of obsessed with, especially those of us who came through an educational academic world.
Right.
And our entree was through film school or, you know, like extension courses or whatever it is. Like, I kept hearing again and again from people who are trying to get in about like mentorship and about networking. And it's like, well, mentorship is very, it can be very informal. Mentorship can even be with somebody you don't even know. You could just be reading their books. You could be like following them on Twitter, and what they say and what they do, you can absorb and learn from without ever having a conversation with them. That's a possibility that a lot of people don't know when you're first coming out. And then as far as networking goes, what helped me tremendously was taking, before I even got into the NBC program or got into the purview of Disney and their writing program, mm-hmm. I joined a writer's group. And it was like a group of like seven or eight of us. And we were all comedy writers, and we all met every weekend for about 3 or 4 hours going over our writing or you know, breaking story for each of our pilots separately. So that was a really great way. And I highly recommend anybody who wants to like really, you know, level up with their writing, like they need to find like-minded writers who can actually help you. And it's hard to know right away. Like I was very lucky that my writers group, they're all wonderful people, all very serious people, good writers, creative ideas. We all got along really well. I've heard some like horror stories about people who join writers groups that are not helpful. People who are just there to like to just talk, you know, like to shoot the shit and like not. I'm sorry. Can I?
Oh swear? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
People who are not necessarily like they're there for the companionship and not necessarily for the work.
Right.
So
casual.
I was very lucky. Yeah. Too casual. Like I was very lucky that I didn't have that to worry about, but made some really good friends and who you know helped me grow as a writer, helped me develop my voice. Concurrently with all the other things. Like, I think that the biggest thing here that as we're talking about that period of my life when I finally hit the bricks and was like ready to go was that I was doing several things at once. It wasn't just one thing, it was like several things at once. And I think that that helped a lot. It gave me more confidence. It gave me the ability to, like you were saying, like, when it comes to networking and comes to meeting people, it gave me a stronger sense of what I liked and what I wanted to write and the kind of work I wanted to do. So when I did meet people, I could talk to that. I could speak to that. And that helps because like the worst thing you could do is not know what you want to do or not know who you are and then come to somebody and go, so Carissa, like, so tell me about how you made it and then tell me that I can do the same thing. It's like, no, you can't. You can't do it that way. Everybody's way is different.
Right.
So,
wow. So like, and I think you hit a couple of important points as far as doing several things, as far as the practices that you were doing that gave you more confidence. Would you say your confidence increased due to the experiences, as you pointed out, the several different things that you were doing at the same time? Before you transition?
Absolutely. And it's only because of the experience, you know, like the more experience you have in your craft or things surrounding specifically what I wanted to do, which was write, like the more confidence I had about the kind of questions I wanted to ask, you know, like I had a greater understanding of it. So I could approach somebody and be very specific about what I wanted to know. I hate that this is the case because I know I've done it and I know that friends have done it. People have done it recently to me, but it's like, you know, the concept of let me just have coffee with you and pick your brain. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I'm sorry, but no, like you need to be very specific about your ask because nobody's going to be able to help you if you don't know what it is that you want. And everybody says, yeah, well, you should know what I want. You should know. I've had conversations with people recently about this. They should know what I want. They should know that I want to write on a show. Uh-oh. It's like, well, yeah, everybody knows you want to write on a show, but what kind of show do you want to write on? What's your voice? What are your favorite shows? What are your favorite movies? Do you have any authors that you like, that you want to emulate? What turns you off? What turns you on? What are the things that, you know, you hope to see come out of the industry in the next 2 or 3 years? What are some things you've seen that you don't like, that you're glad have had their time in the sun and are done? There's just so much more digging that people have to be prepared to do because you can't. Nobody's your genie in a lamp.
No one's in your mind.
You know?
Except
yeah,
you.
Nobody's in your mind. Nobody knows what you want unless you tell them. And that was one of the things that I had time and time again. I had conversations with especially people who've been in the industry for a while as assistants mm-hmm. or young people who are breaking in
yeah.
on the shows that I worked on. One of the things that always came up was, do you feel comfortable approaching your boss asking for something? And some people would say yes, some people wouldn't. And I think that the important thing to remember is that you cannot ask anything of anyone unless you are 100% sure what it is you're asking for. Mm-hmm. And you have to know that that person is receptive to it. The only way you can know that is to observe. You have to pay very close attention to how that individual, you know, whether mm-hmm. they've been in the industry for a long time or they're new or whatever.
Right.
Like if they have the power to give you information, mm-hmm. You have to be very clear about the information you need from them and also be very careful about how you ask for that information. This sounds very like kind of nebulous what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it's very important though. I think you hit a huge point as far as observing and making the ask. And I would only add one point, and feel free to disagree with me if you feel called to. I also feel that you need to have supporting evidence or a support case as far as why you're asking, should it also come back to you.
Very true.
You know, because
very true.
Because again, if you're asking something of someone, make it easy for them to say yes. And how do you make it easy for them to say yes?
And it's kind of, it's not always going to be the same for everybody.
Correct.
Like there are people I've worked for and with who are very different from the next group of people. That's just the way it is. I mean, human beings, right?
Yeah.
And the work also, the work is different and attracts different personalities depending on the project. So, you know, like I think that biggest thing would be to know what you want. If you don't know what you want, do the research on your own, really dig in, really observe, consume as much of it as you can, you know, like watch a lot of different types of shows, read a lot of different types of books, and then you start to realize what you like and what you don't like, what you feel like you can do and what you would hope to someday do. And then only after you've done, like you said, like only after you have something to back it up, really, like you know, just walking off the street asking for a favor, like you can't do that.
Right,
you have to prove yourself. I think that's what you were saying, right? Like
right.
You kind of have to have a reason for, you know, like, hey, so since we were having this conversation, or since I, you know, have had the opportunity to help you during this production phase, there were a couple things about it that I was curious about. I wonder if you could help me by giving me an answer on, you know, like whatever. There are a couple things I learned. That sounds really cool. Do you know anyone else I could talk to about it? You know,
right.
Just being smart and just being curious. And I think that unfortunately, it's not easy for everyone. Not everyone can read a room. Not everyone can, you know, be really smooth when you're talking to people. You know, like I get it. I get it. Sometimes it's awkward. Sometimes it's embarrassing or hard. But I think that the confidence, you'll have confidence in doing that if you've done your homework. If you know the person you're talking to, if you know the kind of stuff that you're interested in and can speak to that with enthusiasm, that makes those conversations a lot easier. And also knowing that not everyone's going to be a fairy godmother who can like wave a wand. No one is a fairy godmother who can wave a wand and make your dreams come true. Nobody can do that. All they can do is point you in the right direction.
Exactly. Hopefully, right? So like, how have you dealt with in the past in your career, how have you dealt with rejection or strange situations that are off-putting where maybe there was a potential opportunity and then no more, you know, like, I think that's a huge part as far as changes, because just as we've highlighted the wins, what I didn't share in the background was all the other no wins or losses. Purportedly losses, but they're really not losses when you look back, right? But at the time, they are tragic, right? Because that's just the way they feel.
Mm-hmm. I've had multiple times when I've had to regroup. There has been, just because that's part of this industry and part of this work, rejection is part and parcel of it. So you have to get really comfortable with people telling you no, for whatever reason, and understand that there's a lot of different reasons for that no. Some of them are completely out of your control. So especially, I mean, this goes for a lot of different industries, but especially the creative industry, because things are so subjective. I think that for me, in the past, when I've had to deal with, you know, going back to the drawing board or hitting the reset button professionally, I take that as, how can I put this? Like, I see it as, okay, this is an avenue that wasn't mine. This was not my track. I'm going to find my track, but this is not my track. But knowing also that the notes that come back to you or the feedback that you get for something, a failed proposal or a move that didn't work out, a job offer that was close to you, accepting that feedback as a way to improve for the next round. So if I went out for, you know, a writer's job that I didn't get, I was like, well, you know, like they found somebody who fits better on their baseball team. That's fine. There's a baseball team out there for me. It's not about me, you know, with the writing that I've been doing, you know, sometimes, I mean, everybody gets rewritten. That's the first rule of writing television. You will get rewritten no matter what.
Right.
You will have to revise no matter what you do. If you're the showrunner, you have to rewrite.
Oh, gosh.
So that's just part of it. And you can never take that personally. There's a lot of factors that go into deciding what works and what doesn't work. And I think that, you know, like for me, that's just what's kept me going. Like there would be no way that I could have gotten, even to this point as a story editor on a show, like I could not have made it this way if I took every rejection as a sign that I shouldn't be here. You know, or took every rejection as a sign that like, you failed, got to start over all over, you know, like, like, it's not failure. It's just an opportunity to reassess, regroup, figure out what the better angle of attack will be. And it's different for everything. For every rejection, you know, there's a reason. And sometimes it does come down to, well, this wasn't a fully formed idea. I better go back and make this better. Sometimes it is about having to go back and really look at what you're doing or saying or whatever and making sure that it's really what you want to say.
Right.
But I think just not taking rejection personally, I would say, is the biggest piece of advice that I would give. Like, you can't stop. You can, you know, have self-reflection, as we all should.
Yes.
Don't think that you're perfect. But I think that, yeah, like everybody has to get very comfortable with rejection if they want to be a TV writer. That's just part of the work.
That's fair. Now, with your first TV writing gig, you won an Emmy Award. So congratulations on that.
Thanks. Very, 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 very unexpected and cool.
So first off, yeah. Congratulations on that. Did
Thank
your
you.
Life change or did anything change
no.
as far?
I haven't even gotten a statuette yet. So, I mean, nothing has changed. I think that the biggest thing will be now that's part of the advertising that my team does for me. My representatives can say that now. And that gives me, I think, a little bit more cachet than I had without it, but it doesn't change the work that I do today. And it doesn't change who I am. I still take things very seriously. And I mean, I take my work very seriously and I try to produce the best thing that I possibly can, even for my own stuff, like my podcast. I want it to be good. And I want it to be a reflection of who I am as a creative person at all times. So, you know, having an award or not, it's great to have one, not going to lie. But it doesn't change who I am and the kind of things I want to do. It's just a nice recognition of, you know, I feel like I just got lucky. I feel like I lucked out by having such a great group of people to work with, a great show to work on. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, the Daytime Emmy crew really felt the same way. So
awesome.
Thank you to the Daytime Emmy voters.
Yay! Now, another huge change that you actually went through in your career was the Writers Guild of America sharing or actually cutting agents out, or so cutting writing agents loose. How was that change and how was the transition? Because that was a significant industry shift.
Yeah, it was very confusing for me because I had literally just started, I think it was 6 months before I had gotten into the guild in November of 18. And we had the new, what do you call that? The new guild signatory rules were implemented in March of 19. So like I was really new to the guild. This was a decision that was, you know, I was a part of as a voting member. I was a part of that decision. But I was like, okay, well, I mean, I guess that means that I don't have my agent anymore. And it was fine because I was working. I didn't have to, like, you know, other than that, I love my agent and I, you know, consider her a friend as well as a representative. I didn't really have to worry about trying to find a job because the timing of it was just, you know, It was right. I think that actually the guild signatory rules didn't go into effect, I think, until like April or May. So I had a couple of months on that, on the magicians before. I was currently on the magicians when all this went down, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So I was sort of watching from the sidelines as my agent was trying to figure out what she was going to do. But thankfully, she made a couple of moves recently. She joined a guild signatory agency, and now she's back on my team. So that worked out really well. That actually happened earlier this summer. So
congrats.
I was without her for about a year, but I was working the whole time. So, you know, I was like very, very, very lucky. Again, fortune pays off, I think. But yeah, like for a lot of my friends and a lot of my colleagues, that was a very difficult time. It was very turbulent because they suddenly, some people I know only had agents. I have an agent and a manager, but like, and so I was able to rely on my managers to kind of shepherd me through that period. And that they're the ones who got me the job on Titans, or helped me get in their line of sight. But a lot of my friends didn't have that option. A lot of my friends, once they were told, you have to cut your agents loose, they now had no representation whatsoever. And some of them were in between jobs. So it was very hard. There were some things that the guild had assembled and built to create an easier go of things. Like there was a database that was implemented, like to make sure that writers could have meetings with showrunners, mm-hmm. have general setup, that kind of thing with executives at networks and production companies. And I think that was okay. Unfortunately, I can't speak to it because I was employed. So I wasn't able to, you know, I didn't utilize any of those things. But from what I've heard, it wasn't easy for everyone to make that transition. That change was difficult. And I know from anecdotal evidence that some people were kind of, you know, having to fend for themselves for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Now that actually brings us to a really interesting point. You mentioned that you had a manager. How did you come to the attention of your manager and hire her as part of your team, as well as your agent too? So
my managers, they're the two guys, they work at Stagecoach Entertainment. And I actually met them. This is again, going back to my time at the Walt Disney Company and Disney ABC TV Group. While I was in the process of trying to be a comedy writer and doing all the stuff that was related to the shows that were on the air at Freeform and at ABC and stuff like that, I befriended one of the executives at Freeform. She was the one who introduced me to her friend, Steve Smith, who is my manager today, because I had made friends with her through the process of doing all these like fun extracurriculars, right? Mm-hmm. With TV shows while I was still working in marketing and creative at Freeform. And after I didn't make it into the Disney program for the third time, I just plain reached out to her because she had written me a letter of recommendation. And I just went for broke. I said, hey, so thank you again for your wonderful letter of recommendation. You probably know, because everybody knew, they send out like a little internal thing, announcement that showed everybody who made it into the program. My name was not on that list. I said, so you probably have seen the list that went around. I wasn't on it. So here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I want to pivot to drama. And I also would love to know if you had any suggestions for how I could get representation, because I'm interested in a manager right now. I just took the bull by the horns. And I was like,
that's huge.
She knows me. Yeah. Like, what was she going to do? Laugh at me?
Right. You know?
And if she doesn't know, she'll just tell me. She'll say, no, I don't know, Steph, but I'll keep your name in mind for when I do. You know, like it's obvious that I have that connection already. Mm-hmm. So just use that connection in a smart way. And the smartest way I could think of is just say, hey, you know, this is happening. You know that you put me up for this. I still didn't get it, but that's cool because I like you. And you know that I'm looking for this now. I'm giving you information about what I'm looking for next. That way you can help me if you want to. And she wanted to. So she introduced me to Steve. I met with him and Evan Lewis, who is also my manager over there. We hit it off. They had read a script that I'd written while I was working on being Mary Jane and liked it enough that they wanted to represent me. So things kind of came together very quickly after that. This was still while I was a showrunner's assistant, keeping that in mind. I had a script that they liked. They then introduced me to my agent, who decided to represent me and then sent me out on a lot of meetings. And then I was staffed on Trinkets soon after. It wasn't a fast transition. It took about a year, but it was enough. I had to write two scripts before. Actually, no, I had to write three scripts before I was staffed on anything. So knowing that too, like, it took a while. A year is not fast, but I was working. I was lucky. I was able to still do things that were in the TV world and get paid for it while also trying to make moves to get staffed. And it came together relatively quickly once I had some really good samples to share.
Now, you mentioned too that your Black women's group for TV and film was a great support to you. How did it help you in your progress and your development as far as the changes that you were making in your life career-wise and the choices that you made?
It was good to have a sounding board. We were all kind of in the same, like, within the trenches together, you know? And we were operating at different speeds, more or less. Some people got staffed sooner than the others, but eventually we all kind of got to a level of, okay, so now you've been staffed. And now 6 months later, now you are staffed. And now you've got this job that's going to allow you to write a script. And then maybe you'll get staffed after that. So it was good to kind of have, a you know, cheerleaders mm-hmm. as, you know, people who were in your, people who were backing you as you came up on these milestone moments. And also just educationally, like, it was good to just talk about what's going on everyone's shows. Like, did you, you know, like how did production go on that? And did you hear about, like, you know, this thing that happened, and this person is going to go, so you want me to put you up for this position, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it's just good to have friends who were all looking out for each other. That's the simplest explanation of, like, that's how I would describe that. And it still is like that to this day, even though we're all stacked, mm-hmm. like, we still cheer each other on and we still congratulate each other on our successes. And we learn from each other. Like, I had a good friend, like, one of the girls who's in that group of friends, like, she recently had a pilot that she shot. And just hearing from her about that experience kind of will help me, hopefully, in the future. If I get an opportunity to shoot a pilot, I'll know what to expect. And you can kind of see what works, what doesn't work, how things go, sometimes how things get stopped, you know, because not everything works out. Not everything, you know, goes super smoothly. But it's good to kind of have real world experience so that you can, you know, manage your expectations. I think that's the important part.
Yeah, that's definitely a big deal. So we're transitioning now from your changes in the industry and making your career changes. And it's been really helpful and informative, I'm sure, for anyone and everyone who wants to be a TV writer out there. Now, in our current times, this question is more on the present based, as far as how has writing for TV in COVID times with the lockdown, how has that changed from how it was pre-COVID?
So different. Well, for one, we don't meet in writers' rooms anymore. We have Zoom. We meet over Zoom. We have Zoom rooms. And that's changed the way that we work, because if you've ever been on a Zoom call, you can see how fatiguing it gets after about an hour. So if you're doing it all day, you're like, oh my God, like, when is this going to be over? So that's changed the way that we've approached writing, like, breaking story on our season. In particular, I'm on a show that's about to go into production in Canada. I'm not going to be in Canada due to COVID. So, you know, that's changing how we're going to do that. I had the opportunity to produce my episode of Magicians that I wrote last year in Vancouver. This year, I will be producing from afar my episode of Titan. So it'll be an echo of what I did last year, but definitely different because now I'm not on set. And so far, pre-production's gone pretty smoothly, but everything's over Zoom. Everything's done remotely. So that's the biggest thing. I think that that's also changed the way that we've approached our scripts. Knowing that we can't do crowd scenes, we have to be very cautious about intimacy scenes, just for safety, you know? Gotcha. We do have a very robust, because this is a Warner Brothers show, we have a very robust health initiative. people are quarantining. They are, you know, getting tests, that kind of thing, regularly. So that's being managed in a very responsible way. Also, you know, due to the restrictions for Canadian initiatives in Canada have been very strong too. So I think that we're going to be as safe as we possibly can be, but it does change the writing. It does change, you know, we're not just going to throw caution to the wind and say crowd scenes in every episode. We're not going to do that. We wouldn't be able to do that if we wanted to. So that's changed. But, you know, I think that everybody wants to do the best job we can do as usual. And a lot of heart and soul has been thrown into this season. And hopefully, you know, despite the obstacles of COVID and of our new reality, we're still going to be able to deliver some compelling television. And I would say that for even like everybody, like my friends and my former bosses, people who are actually producing TV today, we still care very much about what we do. And, you know, we're going to do what we can to make it as safe for everyone as possible.
Awesome. That's awesome. So going forward into beyond this time period now, where do you see the industry heading towards in the future?
It's hard to say. I feel like what's evident is that there's a lot more viewing going on in the home, full stop. I think that more people are tuning into things on, you know, during their leisure time in their house. So as far as TV goes, that means that there's just going to be more opportunity to reach more people. But that also translates to a huge uptick in content, the number of shows that are available to view. We've been seeing that for the past 5-6 years. Over the past decade, really, like the number of shows has increased year to year. So there's just going to be more out there. I am optimistic that it means with the increase in shows, you know, it'll probably level off at some point. People talk about how the bubble will burst and there won't be so many shows to choose from anymore. But I think that for the time being, with the number of shows we have, there are going to be more opportunities for more voices to be heard and more stories from very specific points of view that we haven't seen before to be told. You're seeing that now. There are so many shows out there now that, you know, are from Black creators or Indigenous creators or Asian American creators. And I just saw like a trailer for Hulu movie that is like, has like the main cast is Stacey. And I was like, I am here for it. You know, it's American, like the American diaspora, or I'm sorry, the South Asian diaspora in America in a horror movie. And I'm like, yes, please more of that, because it's fresh. It's something that we haven't seen. And I don't mean to minimize it and make it seem like a novelty, but it is important because it feels so new and special. One of the reasons why it's so important that we keep this going, it can't be a thing where every time you have somebody, I'm going to contradict myself, but I'm thinking at a certain point, we have to see that as par for the course. We have to see that as normal and, you know, not say, well, here is this great example of Black cinema, you know, like, you know, it's like, right. Well, yeah, the people who are making it are Black and people who are in it are Black, but that should be American cinema.
It's a wonderful and, you know, movie. Like it's a wonderful story.
Right. But because we've had 100 years of, you know, cinema told by very specific people. Yes, we're going to have those initial feelings of, you know, like, oh, man, this is wondrous. You know, like, I want to see more. Right. Give me more.
Freedom.
Right. But back to my original point, I think that, yes, like the future is going to be plentiful. Like, I mean, the future is going to have a lot of things to choose from, a lot of content, and hopefully from many different voices and many different points of view, not just the same old ones.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. I love it. So looking back at your story, what did you learn about yourself in the process of changing and adapting to, you know, becoming who you are today as far as the TV writer that you had imagined yourself to be? Any thoughts?
the first thing that popped in my head was, yet again, my wise mom had a conversation with her. She pointed out to me something that had always been evident to her, but hadn't necessarily been clear to me until recently, that I don't take no for an answer. Now that can be both good and bad, depending on what we're talking about. But I think what she meant was, I don't give up. I accept the rejection, and I absorb the rejection, and I say, okay, how can I turn this no into a yes? And I think that that could be something that came from my upbringing as an older child, or it could come from, you know, my having worked as an administrative assistant for so many years when that was really part of my job, was making no's into yeses.
Right. Getting the answer you needed.
Yeah. And that could be what it is. It could be that, you know, because now I use that for my own career, where it's like, okay, well, this, they didn't want this project, or this script didn't do what we needed it to do. So what can I do to make it that, or what can I write to satisfy that ask? Like, you know, what can I do to turn that no into a yes? Because really, it's not necessarily about the project. That's another big thing about writing for TV that a lot of young people or people who are just breaking into the industry will need to know, is that it's not always just the writing. It's about this. It's about who you are. It's about the image that you project, your voice, your presence. And I think that that's something that is hard for a lot of people to accept, but it's the truth. We're in show business. We're in the business of show. And we have to show people that we're the ones who you have to invest in, our ideas and our character. And that sounds very like, it could seem insurmountable sometimes, because then it makes it seem like, okay, so they're actually rejecting me when they say no. Maybe they are. But like dating, you just have to find that person who's the right match for you and who does love all of this. You know, it's so bizarre, but I think that that's the truth. And I think that as far as your question about the kinds of lessons that I've learned, like the kinds of things that I've realized about myself going through this up to this period, all the steps that I've had to take to just get to this point, getting really comfortable with yourself, getting really comfortable with your voice, again, knowing who you are and knowing the kind of stories you want to tell and being able to speak to that competently with a stranger. That's what this is. And I had to really learn how to do that. I'm doing it right now, talking to you. Maybe I'm eloquently doing it and maybe I'm not. But it's something that every writer has to get comfortable doing in some way. You don't have to be a salesperson. You don't have to be like, ah, cha-cha, you know, like I'm amazing. And what? You don't have to do that. You just have to be very competent and very enthusiastic and passionate about what it is you're trying to sell. And in a lot of cases, it's you you're selling. So that's what I've learned. That's what I've tried to incorporate every time. I've tried to embody that feeling in every meeting I take, every conversation I have, every time I pitch in the room. I just want to make sure that I keep that in the back of my head always, because that's how you work. You work by being awesome. You don't work if you're a jerk. You don't work if you're incompetent or dull or boring,
right?
Have no good ideas. That's just the way it is.
I think you actually brought up a great point as far as invest in, because really the relationship is an investment. So number one, investing in you as an individual is really an investing in time. And that's what makes the yes. Another point that I think you just intrinsically have for just viewers out there is you have the ability to relate with everybody and to listen. And so that's just an innate talent of your staff. And that's why we get along so great, you know?
That's nice of you to say that.
Yeah. No, it's very true. You know, you're very relatable and you're calm and easygoing, not so quick to be like,
you
wait a minute.
You didn't see me during that earthquake last night. Calm was out the window.
Wow. Now, did you wake up when it started moving or did you hear the sound? I heard the sound.
I was awake. I heard the sound.
Okay.
Yeah, like you. I heard the sound. I heard it coming and then it was a shake and then it went away and then it started shaking again. I was like, oh my God. Like, I texted several people like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
It's awful.
Welcome to LA. Yeah. So TV writers, just be aware. We don't have hurricanes or tornadoes, but we do have earthquakes, fires, and mudslides. So
yep, totally.
Oh man. So yeah, that's huge. Now, another question is, what takeaways do you hope listeners get from listening to your story as far as these changes that you've underwent?
I would hope that they would take away the lesson that you can't give up, that you do have to have some, you know, fortitude in this business. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not for the overly sensitive. Doesn't mean you have to be a jerk, because in fact, you shouldn't be. But I think also that everybody who wants to approach this work has to be very serious about really devoting the time and the energy. It's not digging ditches. It's not, you know, rodeo clowning. There's no physical exertion or danger, but you do get fatigued. There is a level of fatigue that can be, you know, can come on. And I would advise the people who are listening who really want to go into this industry and create the best work that they believe very strongly in, to have that fortitude, take those breaks that you know you need, meditate if you have to, try not to self-medicate, but really, you know, understand that it's a long road. It's a marathon and you cannot stop if you want to keep going. The only way you never make it is if you stop, if you quit. That's the only way that you're never going to make it. I kind of think about Keanu Reeves. He's an actor, yes, but he was just okay. When he first showed up, he was cute. You know, he's adorable, very nice. He was an okay actor. He stuck around for decades. He worked consistently for decades and made good friends. And now he's one of our like founding fathers of modern Hollywood.
This is
beloved by everyone. And I think if you want to learn how to work in this industry, look at Keanu Reeves. a man of so-so talent who was beloved by all and who could still get people to come see his movies.
That's fair. That's a good one. So my last question is, what skills, as far as the change process that you had to go through, what skills that you gained during these changes have you applied during this recent transformation pretty much of society right now and may apply going forward as we move forward with who knows what else the future will bring?
That's a very good question. I think if I could name it, I would say interpersonal skills, sensitivity, being able to listen, being able to gauge people's attitudes from what they tell you, what they do. We have had to rely on each other a lot more in isolation, surprisingly, at least in my room, in my writer's room, than before, I think, mostly because we're all kind of in crisis right now. Whether we want to admit it or not, we're all in crisis. This isn't normal. None of this is normal. And the old world has fallen away, so to speak. We're now in a whole new place and we're in it together. So one of the things that I feel has helped me, one of the skills that I've had to implement during this period of immense change, is understanding the other, trying to find common ground in what you're trying to communicate to me, what I'm trying to communicate to you, especially when it comes to writing. That's all it is. It's just messaging. That's all it is. And we have to be very sensitive about the kind of messages we tell each other, kind of things we say. And the things we write. And I think that just knowing whether it's come from, like I said, my experience of having to support people over the years as an assistant or what have you, I think that that's a skill that I've had to build for years. And thankfully, I feel like it's coming in handy. Being able to read the room, being able to understand what people are actually asking for, even though they're not asking you. Those are things that I think have helped me, and I hope will continue to help me through this weird, weird, weird phase we're all in. Professionally, yes. Professionally, being able to read other people and communicate successfully, yes. Totally need to do that as a TV writer. But also in with all of the COVID and, you know, social strife and all of the issues politically that we've had to confront, being able to assess and communicate successfully with people, that's going to be a huge, huge, huge thing over the next, I would say, few years. We're not getting out of this overnight.
Oh, that's pretty powerful. Thank you. So on a lighter note, I know I said the last one would be my last question. I want to end it on a positive note. What's next for you?
Well, I'm going to be producing my episode of Titans. It's going to be filming in Toronto very soon. And and I'll be doing that from here remotely. And I'm also working on a couple of projects on my own that'll kind of help to add to my resume of sorts, my portfolio. There'll be a pilot that I'm writing, and then also a couple of pitches that I'm developing. So I'm busy, busy, busy. I've still been taking meetings over Zoom, just making sure that I get FaceTime with people, meeting people. It's kind of weird because I still don't quite know how to do that. Like, I mean, I know how to do it, but I'm also like, what do I do now that I met you? You know, that kind of thing. It's all very strange in this world, but it'll work out. I think that, that's at least I have that to look forward to. Like, I've been keeping very busy. So all the planning and stuff that I'm supposed to be doing now, apparently it's Mars retrograde. So everything is sort of messy. The best we can do is make plans and strategize for November when things will suddenly become easier. So that's what my plan is.
Nice. Well, thanks so much, Stephanie, for being the first guest on the podcast series. Really, really appreciate it.
This was wonderful.
This was great. So great start to what I hope turns out to be a great series. So until the next time, dear listeners, I wish you and your loved ones all the best as we navigate through the changes in our current world. Thank you for listening, and remember that you are the change that you wish to see in the world. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Changes with C.A. Sidor. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, or leave a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. We hope to connect with you soon.